I call insight an ultra-mystic faculty only to indicate that its nature is nearer intuition than intellect, that it cannot be thought determined and that it arises more from meditation than from ratiocination. Mystics who cannot understand this point should consider that their own experience may admit of degrees of depth as well as of varying areas of comprehension. Insight is the ultimate degree, the widest possible area. There are thus two kinds of mysticism, ordinary and ultra-mystic. The first is preparatory and disciplinary, whereas the other is ultimate and culminatory. The first fits the mind and forms the character, while the other fits the metaphysician mystic for his transformation into a philosopher, which is the grand climax of all these preparations. We must not confuse the two stages which are separated from each other by the metaphysical discipline. Meditation is practiced in both, but the exercises differ greatly. These higher and formerly secret exercises, which implement the metaphysical doctrines, will be revealed in the second volume of my work, which will answer in the fullest possible way for the first time in Western writing the question, how are we to know the over-self as it is? For thinking gives only an indirect view of existence, whilst feeling gives only a personal view. The solution to our difficulty lies in the unfoldment of insist. And this arises only when feeling surrenders the ego and thought stills itself into quietude, when the reports of feeling refined by calm meditation are checked, scrutinized and confirmed by thought sharpened to a keen edge of rationality, and when both metaphysics and mysticism have done their work and departed. This insight is neither intellect nor intuition, as ordinarily understood, it is an ultra-mystical faculty. What I am trying to say is that it is not right to look for final knowledge and experience of the supplement, over-self to the immature and half-grown mystic, but rather to the full-grown, philosophically trained mystic, and that what is commonly believed to be the final mystic experience is in reality followed by a further and more advanced stage. For a protracted maturation is required to bring the young plant into complete bloom. And it is only at this final stage that metaphysics, which was the higher octave of science, can and must become converted into its own higher octave, philosophy. We must differentiate between metaphysics and philosophy, between rational ratiocinative speculation and actual ultra-mystic verification. A man may be a learned metaphysician when seated in his study, but an utter fool when moving in the street. A philosopher, however, seeks to live as befits his name, that is wisely, whether it be the life of thought or the life of action. Although we are compelled to make a sharp separation of mysticism from metaphysics in the earlier stages of this quest, when the purpose of that separation has been achieved and our mystical experiences have been purified, guided, disciplined and verified by metaphysical reflection, we are later compelled to abolish the distinction between both. In that ultimate stage they are no longer contraries, no longer exclude each other, but merge in the ultra-mystical revelation that is insight. Thus, too, the currents of feeling and reasoning which formerly diverged from each other, now meet and harmonize. Nor could this insight have been born in any other way except from the marriage of mystical striving and metaphysical activity. The process whereby every metaphysician must become a mystic if he would attain the goal is as inevitable as the process whereby every mystic must become a metaphysician for the same reason. The traditional bifurcation between them ultimately becomes artificial although fully justifiable formally. The distinction between truth got by reasoning and truth got by feeling is suppressed by the subsequent mysterious experience of insight which embraces and fuses the profoundest elements of both, and yet somehow transcends them also. Religion may convert a man in a moment, mysticism may give him its results in ecstatic hours within a few years, but philosophy is the labor of a lifetime. Reflection has taught me and experience has convinced me that to take any particular factor in life like mysticism, to set it up alone and to exalt it above all others, is a partial and misleading procedure, and one therefore to be deprecated. I do not believe that it is possible to arrive at a sound and sane view of life unless it is a general view, unless it is sufficiently well informed to accept all the principal factors into their justly proportioned proper places and, finally, unless it relates them all together into a complete whole. Let us not lose ourselves in fanatical extremes of doctrine, but remember that wisdom lies in picking out here and there the minute grains of truth amid the widespread mass of rubbish. It is a mistake to regard the yoga of body control, for instance, with contempt, and to term it a lower path. It deals with the purification, strengthening and healing of that most important part of the self, the body. No amount of wishful thinking or metaphysical magic on the part of a student can spirit this body away. It is there and has to be reckoned with. If, for instance, he has a severe toothache and sits down to what he hopes will be a blissful meditation, supplement, the pain of the tooth will continue to trouble him, to disturb his thoughts and to destroy his inner bliss. How foolish then for anyone to regard with contempt a method of putting the body into good order so that it shall not hinder the yogi's mental aspirations. Therefore, none of the three conventional yoga groups really exclude each other, none is really fit to stand on its own feet, but all are inseparably associated with each other and must simultaneously or successively supplement each other in actual study and practice. The various yogas, physical, emotional, intellectual and ultra-mystical, are traditionally made to follow one another and students usually graduate from the one to the other. But it would be better and wiser under the altered conditions of modern times if they could practice them as simultaneously as possible, so far as the first three are concerned. It is only the fourth that is really to be entered independently. It is unfortunate that this larger view of yoga has been lost with the lapse of time in India, so that pundits come to exaggerate the value of the intellect, ascetics fuss themselves to death with bodily regimes and mystics wallow in a bath of unchecked emotion, whilst all three mutually despise each other. The philosopher does not fall into this error. He realizes that human life rests on the tripod of thought, feeling and action, and that genuine growth cannot be made piecemeal but must be balanced and is to be made only integrally. It is as absurd and chimerical to take the intellectual yoga to be high and holy as it is to take the emotional yoga to be inferior and illusory. All three paths must be followed to attain a genuine initiation into philosophy, as distinct from mere metaphysics, and moreover they must be followed as simultaneously as possible. For the whole being of man must be worked upon and not merely a part. We must make use of all parts of human nature if it is to be properly developed. Philosophy therefore deals not merely with the mind alone but also with the feeling and with the flesh. Wisdom is consummated when it has understanding and control of these three. Despite appearances, the course is consistent throughout. The God whom we find by meditation in the heart is the first step towards the God whom we find in the whole universe, the force which drew us away from the world in our ascetic effort to become self-detached, is inevitably followed by the force which drives us back to the world in selfless service. I have not abandoned the principles advocated in my earlier books, but have merely put them where they properly belong. Hence nobody else need abandon them either, nor because have pointed to further steps complain, as some have complained, that I have cut away the step on which they already stand. Others feel that what they had hitherto regarded as sacrosanct has been relegated to the useless and illusory, and thus their greatest support torn away. I can only reply that they have utterly mistaken my words. They have not been asked to throw personal intuitions or mystical feelings away but only to cleanse them. They have not been asked to renounce yoga but only to readjust the values apportioned to their yogic experiences. Meditation is as indispensable to them now as ever it was. God is not illusory but the greatest reality of human existence, only we have to purify our ideas of Him. Let it be ad supplement, admitted that the over-self of the mystic is not the over-self of the philosopher. The God of the African savage was not the God of Prime Minister Gladstone who laid down the law for him, yet both were right in their attitude of veneration. What I have formerly written about the over-self and the way to it is still true for all those who have not successfully passed through the second degree. They are the great majority. And if they feel that strength or desire or opportunity are lacking for this ultimate path, they need not attempt to tackle it but may rest content with remembering that it exists and occasionally reading a little about it. This, too, will bear good fruit in time. Nevertheless, the few who care to mount higher with me now have the opportunity to do so. And the urge will come to them because they will have the eyes to see that I have prepared the way for a revelation still to come, which will be essentially more spiritual than any yet vouchsafed in my writings. I may fitly conclude with some words written nearly a century and a half ago by that illustrious Frenchman Louis Street Martin. The only initiation which I preach and seek with all the ardor of my soul is that by which we enter into the heart of God and make God's heart enter into us. Dot. There is no other mystery to arrive at this holy initiation than to go more and more down into the depths of our being and not let go till we can bring forth the living, vivifying root. The Hidden Teaching Beyond Yoga, Paul Brunton.